Yo, what's up, guys? It's your boy Elijah here with another episode of CHN Radio. I tried out a new intro and I hated it, but we're not going to re-record it. We're just going to let that simmer, let that sink in. And I'll just introduce our wonderful co-host today, known U.S. Open Cup hater and League's Cup apologist, Josh. Josh, how you doing?
Oh, man, that is the opposite world.
Oh, yeah. I knew that was a deep cut, you know.
Yeah.
For you, because I know you are not a fan of the League's Cup.
I just think it's a farce. So it's the Super League. If for those that are not familiar with what's going on in the U.S., the Major League Soccer invented itself a league in which it could compete solely against Mexican teams and then beat them because all the games are on the U.S. home fields. None of them are in Mexico. And then the winners of the tournament get to go to the CONCACAF Champions League. And previously, they had failed to beat Mexican teams in the CONCACAF Champions League because they played it at a time when Mexico was in midseason form. But now MLS is in midseason form. Nonetheless, here comes Messi, and he is now going into he made it to the final, joined the league just in time to get it to the U.S. Open Cup final. So it is all going down.
Yeah, it was quite the implosion by FC Cincinnati, but we're not a American soccer podcast. Mm-hmm. I will mention, though, that I do think League's Cup's going to look different next year, because just based off of the complaints from the folks in the Mexican, like, not the Mexican Federation, the folks in the Mexican League, like the coaches and like GMs or whatever they're called, directors of football, have just all been like, this tournament is stupid. It's not fair to Mexican teams. And they did say they were going to revisit the tournament as a whole. So anyway, that's not important. what is important is that we have a fun, action-packed episode 214 for you. Make sure, want to make sure that you are, one, subscribe to this podcast on whatever podcast platform that you use, Apple, Spotify, no longer Stitcher, RIP, Google Podcasts, whatever you use, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast. Make sure that we're your first, second, or third listen every single day of the week. And then, of course, follow us on all the socials at Coming Home NUFC, at CHN_podcast. That's pretty much it for plugs. Do not follow me on Twitter. Harvey, do not follow me on Twitter. You'll just be disappointed. So there's that. Yeah. Josh, you got any plugs?
I'm working on just a bunch of U.S. soccer stuff. We are going to record an episode tomorrow discussing the 1999 U.S. Open Cup final between the Rochester Raging Rhinos and the Colorado Rapids. The underdog, the plucky underdog, wins the Open Cup final in 1999. And for you, those of you that aren't familiar with the U.S. Open Cup, I am a huge fan of it, and is the second oldest national cup in the world. So outside of England. Yeah, it's founded in 1914 as the National Challenge Cup and then changed its name to the U.S. Open Cup. And in 1999, it added the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. But it is the longest continuous running national cup competition in the world. Second longest, I said?
Yeah, second longest. I would imagine the FA Cup is the longest?
I believe the FA Cup is the longest, yeah.
Damn it. Thought we had one up
They codified the sport. They just brought it to us. They brought it to us directly in the 1860s, and we've been playing it ever since.
Facts. All right. Well, there you go. That's all the plugs we got. Let's hop into it. We're going to start with a little bit of news. We'll review that Man City match as the British tabloids like to call it, and then we'll go ahead and preview Liverpool. So we'll do that. That was not a typo. I purposely typed in Liverpool.
I didn't know you would say it out loud.
Oh, dude, come on. Yeah, they're fun to make fun of. All right, Josh. update from the women? Let's start there.
Yeah. So the home match that we had given so much information about last week was postponed, and I don't know if we had mentioned that during the pod.
No, I'm not sure. It happened literally right after the podcast was postponed.
For reasons XYZ beyond my ability to completely explain, but ultimately the kickoff home match for the women in the league has been postponed, and instead they will open their campaign this Sunday as they host Burnley in the FA-WNL Cup at 6 p.m. local time, Kingston Park Stadium. Go get tickets. Go catch this match. Go support the lasses. They would love to make a good cup run. Anyone would love to see them make a good cup run. This is going to be a fun team to watch. And if you have the time and the inclination, go support them.
Yeah. And I mean, Josh, come on, man. You could say why this match was postponed. The other team wanted to watch the World Cup final, which is just wild.
I could see both sides. I could see both sides. Okay. I ran a women's amateur team here in the States, Step 4. Mm-hmm. And we were set to go play a game in Yakima, Washington. And the weather report said it was going to be a 105 degrees Fahrenheit in Yakima, Washington, with what's called a resonant heat of means the temperature that is reflecting off of the turf in what is central Washington in the middle of the summer was set to be between 115 and 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
What's the problem?
All my players called me the night before and said, and I was the general manager of the team, and the coach said, Josh, we're not going to do it. And all the players said, Josh, we're not going to go. We're not going to go. And I let the league know that night that we wouldn't be showing up because it was too hot. They instead of postponing the game, they punished us and they took points away. Look, at an amateur level, what they did was wrong, but at an amateur level, a last minute cancellation, a last minute pause, a last minute postponement is completely it's understandable. It happens at an amateur level.
Hear me out.
But when you're talking about you've crossed the threshold into the professional realm and you have a scheduled match and the stadium has been paid for that day.
Yeah.
And there are home tickets have been sold and fans are expecting a game and the home team has offered accommodation to watch the match in the stadium to postpone the kickoff and give you free food and drinks to watch the game.
Yeah.
And then you still say, we're not going to come. To me, that shouldn't be a postponement. That should be a forfeiture.
I agree. And that's why I'm like, I understand you saying I see both sides, but the example you gave was a legitimate player health and safety thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No, what we just experienced was, I don't even know, but okay. That happened. So just if you want a preview of that match, I mean, I guess Josh, you're going to have to preview it again.
We'll do it again in a few weeks.
It'll be different.
Yeah. It'll be different.
There'll be context and all that kind of jazz. So but does look like women's team at least is having fun. Their social presence is really cool now. They're showing training videos and all that kind of jazz. So that's cool. And then I'm going to hop around a little bit. There also happened on Friday after we literally – not as soon as the – when I tell you the women's postponement happened – it had to have been 5 minutes after we got off.
We logged off. Yeah.
We logged off and literally I opened up Twitter and I was like, dude, wow, just our luck. But this other thing happened on Friday as well. It was an accident, I guess. As you all know, Amazon's docuseries on Newcastle has been releasing in the UK and Ireland every Friday. And this past Friday, episode 3 was supposed to come out. And it did, but also episode 4 was released, and it was only up for a few hours, but it was enough. It was up long enough for many fans to realize that at the end of episode 4, which was supposed to come out the September 1st or something like that. I don't know. It was supposed to come out later. At the end of that episode, Amanda Stavely confirmed that Newcastle had signed a new kit supplier deal with Adidas that would go into effect essentially next season. And again, that episode wasn't supposed to come out. I'm sure they had a full like campaign and all this other stuff like that they were going to do in order to announce it the day that the episode was supposed to come out, which I believe was September 1st. And so again, none of that was able to happen because for like 8 hours, half of Newcastle knew already that, and then subsequently everyone who was a Newcastle fan, the big news, the big reveal. So it's kind of ruined. And essentially, it led to a scramble of sorts, Friday or Saturday morning, in which, the Adidas had to tweet out a graphic that was like a coming soon with the black and white stripes. The Adidas logo in black and white. And then Newcastle had to quote tweet it with the eyeball emojis and all that kind of jazz. But yeah, so it looks like next season, and I don't think it would be this season. It'd be unheard of to do a supplier swap mid season. Well, actually be at the beginning of the season after you've already.
Yeah, it'd be silly. The social media posts weren't entirely clear. The only reason you and I would believe that it's not going to be is because it wouldn't make sense. But the way that it was worded implies that they were going to make the swap on the 1st of September. But as you said, it's probably they meant to make the announcement on. For me, I still think that's in poor form as an organization to your current supplier, right? Because I think that there's going to be a handful of people that are going to look at the kits that are out now and say, okay, well, I'm not going to buy one. I was going to get one for Christmas, but I'll tell you what, I'm just going to wait until the end of the year when we see what the Adidas ones look like, you know? And
you can only get these kits this year.
That's the other thing,
this home kit is a good kit. Like it's objectively, that is one of the best Newcastle home kits in the last like three or four seasons. So it's like, I would still get the home kit. I'm not waiting. I mean, sure, there's some fit issues, but like realistically, like the people who buy kits every year are going to buy kits every year.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the people who pick and choose what kits they want to buy based on what it looks like, they're going to pick and choose. And I'm sure there's going to be a bump next season when Adidas comes out with their kits, but they could be shit. Like Man United's, I think, away kit or whatever. Like people don't like that. Like that's an Adidas company an Adidas brand. But I don't know if it's particularly in poor taste. Because this kind of common to kind of let people know, you know, that this is the last year of a kit supplier. And especially with Castore, like in particular, it was already supposed to be like there was an emergency extension signed during the takeover, I want to say, or like right after the takeover, because they couldn't so it was very much like people knew that Castore was on their last season, or it was unlikely that next season they'd be the kit supplier. But there's potential as well that some of this stuff does go into effect immediately, because you have to remember, like, Castore doesn't do things like so typically when you go top to bottom, like Puma is a good example, like all the coaches wore Puma trainers and all the players, most of the players were like Puma trainers, and in training, like the coaches were wearing Puma soccer cleats and all that kind of stuff. And so, and there was way more apparel that extended beyond just like the initial kit stuff. And so there is a potential that like some of this stuff goes into effect where because again, Castore can't do anything about what shoes Eddie Howe's wearing in training. But if the entire training staff starts wearing Adidas cleats, then you kind of know some of that stuff's going to affect. If some sort of like, I mean, again, this is neither here nor there, but if there's like some sort of Adidas Newcastle shoe collab, like there's nothing really Castore can do. Again, it would be in poor taste to do something to the public like that. But I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing some Adidas droppings here and there.
Yeah, maybe. One of the things that you and I would both know is the way Adidas structures its organizational contracts. So Adidas is the exclusive kit supplier to every single team in Major League Soccer and has been for a very long time. And part of that is that from almost top to bottom, players are wearing Adidas gear in training. Everything is Adidas, except players are allowed to have independent and individual contracts with multiple footwear providers. So
shoe suppliers,
but they could slides. They could have, you know, slides and all kinds of things. Just thinking beyond cleats. But yeah, like, who knows? Who maybe Isak will be the next Skechers signing, and so everyone else will be wearing Adidas. Isak will be wearing Kane's Skechers specials with the light up heels.
Oh yeah, and for the record, like even on a larger level, like I'm thinking about in terms of like what the guys are wearing in those full jumpsuits, like their travel aware and all that kind of stuff, in terms of like sometimes having uniformity with shoes, but like in training, player boots and all that kind of stuff, like they're whatever cleats they wear, they're wearing because they likely already have a deal with some, especially at the Premier League level, like they've already got a shoe deal with someone at some point. Like whoever Isak's wearing now, he's wearing those people because he's got a shoe deal with Nike or Adidas, whoever he's wearing. Same with Tonali, same with Almiron, same with all those guys. The only noticeable thing to be looking out for if you're a real kit nerd, and that's why this segment's gone so long, is that we're nerds, is just like, look at what the coaches are wearing in training, what they're wearing. Are they wearing those Adidas training soccer cleats that we all know and well, that leather with the black leather ones with the white stripes? Like, yeah. So, oh, all right. Anyway, this is probably the next bit is probably what people actually care about and are more excited about. Lewis Hall.
Who's that?
Oh. yeah. So Lewis Hall has joined on loan with an obligation to buy at the end of the season for Newcastle. We briefly touched on this last week, but we have a little bit more information, which is interesting. So the fee at the end of the season will be £28 million plus £7 million in add-ons. He's going to be wearing the number 20 shirt at Newcastle. They did a pretty nice intro video showing like old pictures of him and all that kind of jazz. But I think the biggest thing here is the loan with obligation to buy. This helps both clubs involved. I think people are looking at it mainly because of the two clubs. One is getting way more scrutiny on financial fair play than the other. And so I think the national consensus has been that Newcastle has done really well financial fair play wise and in terms of like they don't spend a lot, all that kind of jazz, because outside of the first winter window when the takeover occurred, Newcastle spent relatively normally for teams at that level. But of course, Chelsea is the big story here with how much money they've made. Mm-hmm. And so this allows them to make money off of a player, and that will help them next season when regarding to their financial fair play stuff. And for Newcastle, Lewis Hall doesn't count against them financial fair play wise until the end of until next season. So like this isn't a purchase technically for this season. It's a purchase for next season, which helps everyone, I guess, but it mostly helps Newcastle, but people seem to think because it's a player sale that it helps Chelsea, which it does, but they need a lot more help than £30 million signing. They've got wages and stuff to get rid of and other players that are way further out of favor and all that kind of jazz.
Yeah, I you know how I knew this was a good signing? Aside from just knowing that Lewis Hall is a good up-and-coming player, was how upset Chelsea players were or Chelsea fans were. Usually when someone goes that they're on the fence about, you'll see a lot of, well, I'll drive him myself or, you know, screw that guy.
Yeah, like Cucurella, when Cucurella was linked to a loan option for Newcastle.
Yeah.
I had Chelsea fans texting me saying, oh, we'll sell him to you for £5. Like they want him out of the club.
but when this goes down, people genuinely were upset. Like, oh, this guy was a legend in the making. Like, this is,
yeah,
you know, and this is someone that they will truly, I think, look at in years to come in his success at Newcastle and sort of wish, man, we should have kept that guy. So that's how I know Lewis Hall was a good signing. And I think that he caps, I think for me, what is, I would give out of 10, maybe a 9 out of 10, like, you know, maybe an 8.5 out of 10 in off season signings. And that's just me like having a wish list. But
yeah,
when you really look at what they've accomplished and the way that they're thinking two steps ahead and playing 3D chess with the Premier League and with financial fair play, this is a straight 10, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you have a very small window to get young English talent in, especially at somewhat reasonable pricing. You know, if you want a case in point, you look at what Mason Mount went for, look at what Declan Rice went for. I mean, look at like what a lot of the other young English stars have gone for, and the amount of young English talent that Newcastle have been able to acquire without paying, I think Gordon's the most expensive at 45 mil, maybe with add-ons, like Tino Livramento, obviously. And then Joe Willock with £25 million, which was pre takeover, but still good business by the recruitment team. And obviously Lewis Hall now with the 35 million pounds. It's like you're able to get guys who should be Premier League mainstays for a while, that if you had waited 2 years to buy them, their price is double.
Yeah.
Like, it's just how it is, you know? So good on them. I think we've kind of talked a little bit about his fit, and obviously as we learn more, we'll see. I'm curious to see, you know, when he's going to start playing, when he gets minutes, all that kind of jazz. Yeah, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to get integrated into the side. And but I do think there'll be questions that are going to be asked of Dan Byrne and Matt Target. And, you know, the competition is huge. I mean,
yeah,
Eddie Howe's all about breeding competition. So that's good on that. You got anything else you got to say on news-wise, or you want to move on?
No, I think we're good to go.
Sweet. Let's hop into it. Newcastle lost at the Etihad. And I do want to set the tone here. I want to set the scene. The opening of that match, it is the late game match on Saturday. So it is like the prime time match for everyone around the world. It was noon for me and Josh. It was like 3 o'clock for the folks on the East Coast. What is that? It's 8 o'clock kickoff for the people in Newcastle. So this is the prime time match. It features the defending FA Cup champions, Premier League champions, and Champions League champions. So they did the treble. Manchester City at home hosting a good Newcastle team.
Yeah.
Who has not won at the Etihad in years, for sure. And the last time Newcastle went to the Etihad, and I think when people think about Newcastle playing Man City, they think of the draw at St. James's last season, which great. Great competition, great, wonderful match, really back and forth. People do forget that the last time we went to the Etihad, we lost 2-0. So setting the tone there, with all that taken into context, Newcastle lost 1-0, and you think, based off of the reaction on Twitter, that Newcastle lost 5-0 to Burnley at home. because that's how fans were reacting. But yeah, it was 1-0 off of, by the way, insanely good goal by a really good player.
What do you do?
It's just like top quarter volley. Like, I understand the frustration because it's not a win and, you know, you think you're competing, but like, this is against the best team in the world and Newcastle lost 1-0 to the best team in the world, which is like a top three result you could have against the best team in the world. The other options are you win or you draw, and then every other option, every other outcome is significantly worse. Oh, you lost 3-0 to the best team in the world? Well, that sucks. I mean, you're not good enough. But you lost 1-0 to the best team in the world, and it was a 60-40 possession split. Like, I don't know. All right, you know, before I get too upset and all that kind of jazz, I'm going to quickly run through a couple of the three words.
Yeah.
just because there were some. There's some pretty good ones. Toon Army Denver with a new logo. Shout out to them. It's a nice, slick new logo. Said, we defeated ourselves. Eric Schmidt at NUC Indiana said, went as expected. The homie Joe Avery said, just couldn't finish. Haha, that's what she said. Kim Avery, which with the most popular response, said, Botman harnessed Holland, which is pretty good. Dominic Jordy Lad 93, he says, terminate Elmer on contract, which, again, okay, cool. John Bush, another homie, said, lack of urgency. And Tyneside Show Bob, which, by the way, might be the best Newcastle Twitter name I've seen in a minute, said, way too sloppy. And Josh, do you have three words?
First, shout out to Tyneside Sideshow Bob.
Yeah, Tyneside Show Bob. That's a great name.
That's a great name. Yeah, because so it makes me think of Colaccini. So I'm a big fan of big hair. My three words were don't blame players.
Oh, yeah, we'll get into that at the end. But so just so everyone's aware, I think I don't know like how deep into analysis we're really going to get, because there was really only we'll talk about some general stuff, but there was really only one main event. So I'm going to quickly go over the lineups for both teams. Newcastle went with an unchanged lineup, so which not really surprising if you know Eddie Howe. They had, of course, Nick Pope in goal, Dan Burns, Sven Botman, Fabian Scherer, Kieran Trippier, with Joel Linton, Bruno and Tonali in the midfield, Anthony Gordon, Isak, and Almiron up top. And then Man City went with their whatever, I don't even know what formation we're going to call this. Ederson in goal, Kyle Walker, Ruben Diaz, Akanji. And then is it Garvidal or Vardiol? I can't say that guy's name.
Vardiol. Yeah, Guardiol.
Guardiol. Oh, so it's the V is silent. All right. Okay, I don't like that.
That's just what I heard. I don't know if that's right.
I mean, you're probably right. Rodri, Kovacic, Kovacic is really good. Phil Foden, and then Julian Alvarez, the goal scorer, and Jack Grealish with Haaland up top. So those were the lineups. I think overall, just kind of how the match started, pretty sloppy from Newcastle. Just really couldn't string passes together. Man City looked pretty dominant at, you know, for the most part. And then kind of, again, there were moments where Newcastle had the ball and it looked okay, but for the most part in the first half, it's pretty sloppy from them. And that sloppiness led to a goal in the 31st minute. Alvarez had the opening goal on the edge of the box. Foden swept in a ball towards him, and then Alvarez took a touch and kind of hit it on a little bit of a half volley with it going kind of into the far corner. There's argument to be made as to whether or not Nick Pope could have gotten that. I mean, you could say that, yeah, sure, whatever. But yeah, that was kind of the big moment for either team, really. Haaland had some breakaway chances, a couple ones, nothing that was super dangerous. There was one chance that he just kind of mishit it, like took a really bad touch. But for the most part, Newcastle had a couple of opportunities, nothing that stood out. Both teams had a lot of shots that were blocked. It was, again, kind of cagey. There were moments here and there where Newcastle strung some passes together. But it was a chess match where the first 15 or so minutes, like, Pep and Eddie Howe were really just feeling each other out. You could see that there was no, like, imposing a game plan, really, until you kind of started to see what Pep was trying to do and how Eddie was going to respond. And then out of the second half, like, as expected, Eddie came out kind of with a different mindset, different game plan in mind, made some substitutions, all that kind of jazz. But again, it was a chess match, back and forth. And at the end of the day, like, Newcastle couldn't really do anything in order to, like, make this a tie, which I don't know why I said they couldn't do anything to make this a tie. They didn't score. That's all that means. So I don't know. I kind of summed up the whole match. Josh, do you have anything that kind of stuck out to you in particular?
Yeah. So I had 59% possession for City, 60. Well, you know, we're splitting hairs on 1% possession, but yeah. 13 fouls, one yellow, one offside, three corners. I just felt like overall that's a, you know, they were more aggressive in not only ensuring that they had possession of the ball at home, but they were intent on retrieving possession as quickly as possible. And this, you know, I often don't think that's the best strategy of just sitting on the ball for the sake of sitting on the ball. But Manchester City don't just sit on the ball. They have possession with intent to score and then to sort of like score again and basically sever your neck and score again if they can. And so for what it's worth, despite Julian Alvarez getting his goal, I felt that Foden played well, but holding Haaland to, you know, nil point, no goals for Haaland, that is an accomplishment. The guy is a beast. He's the Terminator out there. We got caught out, and sometimes it's just, I feel like the game plan was to contain and then attack in waves and win opportunity provided. And look, it's Manchester City. Like, not only are they the treble winners from last year, but they were also the league winners the year before, weren't they? Like, didn't they pipped Liverpool a couple years in a row now, or is it 3 years in a row? So it's just, overall, they're just a better team. And I, you know, and for now, there's not much we can do about that. And we have to watch our team slowly build itself up and Eddie Howe get the pieces that he needs to employ his tactical concepts, and we'll get there. And we're not there yet. And that's fine. There's going to be a handful of teams, one, two, three teams this year that are going to do this to us, and it's okay. It's going to be okay. Last year, I was a little bit more worried. After seeing what we did to Villa to start the season, I'm not stressed. This was going to happen, but I'm much more confident about the next couple of games than I was before.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think part of it is one, like, again, the it's not the, and this is probably the part that annoys me the most about Newcastle fans. And by the way, I didn't even mention this. Shout out to the Shady Gang. I watched this whole match with them. Really chill dudes. Check out Shades of Blue podcast, Man City podcast with a bunch of folks of color. Shades of Blue, pretty clever name. But yeah, it was really fun. Did a watch along with them. Did a little preview. Got to talk a little tactics and all that kind of jazz. But I think, like, even just like even hearing them dissect what Pep's doing and all that kind of stuff, real time, it's just very evident that Man City are a class above the league. Like, I think people don't realize that. It's like, right now in its current form, like, we are witnessing, you know, one of the best, you know, like one of the best runs in that, like, likely one of the best runs in league history, like, just with how successful they've been under Pep. And I think people, as Newcastle fans for sure, do not realize that, like, this team is better than every other team in the league, and there is a gap, like a significant gap. The fact that they could chase down Arsenal with the lead Arsenal had should have told people already that there was a significant gap.
Yeah.
Like that like, and they are really good at recruiting players that fit exactly what they need. And like, you just have to hand it to them. Like, it's just a well-run team, a well-staffed, like, coaching staff with just a wonderful, brilliant football mastermind at the helm. And it's just really hard to see them, like, I just, I don't know. It's just hard to picture anyone else winning the league right now or in the next couple of seasons. Like, I try to give Arsenal, Liverpool the benefit of the doubt, but it's like, at the end of the day, it always comes down to, like, I think Liverpool doesn't have the talent they used to, for sure, and I don't think Arteta is as good of a coach as Pep, so it's like, I really don't see who's challenging them, you know, in at least in this season for that Premier League title.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I mean, it could be Newcastle, people are asking. But yeah, so that being said, do you have anything else before we get into some of the into some of the hot takes from the internet? I do want to quickly point out some players that did well for Newcastle before we get into the other stuff. Josh, I know you have one. I do think Nick Pope came up clutch, made a lot of really a few pretty clutch saves to keep it from being more than one goal. But Josh, do you have anyone you want to give a shout out to?
I mean, what's up with Shar? He's always getting hurt, like in the first few minutes of the game.
Insane. And I thought he dislocated his shoulder. Like I was like, oh,
I thought it could have been a collarbone issue the way that they had his shirt pulled down. And I was like, well, maybe he's out for good this time. But no, he's like got the mutant healing factor. He's like the Wolverine out there. And shout out to Shar for friggin' toughing it out. That doesn't mean that his performance was stellar, but I mean, I don't know.
I think between him and Botman, like they executed their game plan well, which was like Newcastle. I mean, in the first half, they were double teaming Haaland. And then in the second half, Botman was 1v1 with Haaland for the entire match. It actually freed up. This is super tactical, nerdy stuff, but that kind of freed up Newcastle to do a little bit more in attack because they were allowed to push a little bit of some numbers forward when you don't have to worry about double teaming Haaland. So you're not keeping three guys back there. Yeah. Dan Byrne was getting forward a little bit. He actually had a run where he galloped all the way up the field and then lost the ball, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, so yeah, honestly, big shout out to both Fabian Schär and Sven Botman. Definitely Sven Botman, because he took that 1v1 opportunity to heart. And I do want to mention that I think the last, like when he first, one of his first matches last season was actually against Man City, and he was a part of the mistakes that led to both goals that Man City scored. So it's just tremendous growth from him. We talked about in the last episode just how well certain players just come into the league and fit, and you know, that's really cool to see. Now we talked about the negativity of Newcastle Twitter after that match, and I kind of didn't even log in. I did the CHN podcast tweets and Coming Up Newcastle tweets, and kind of just because I knew the takes were going to already be bad. And AFC 360 came out with a tweet that had a few players on it. It was Bruno Tonali. I think it was Bruno Tonali, Dan Byrne. It was like a graphic, and it was like, it's only game two of the season, but is this time to start, forcing the blame on some of these players? And it was like very targeted. It was players who, like, you know, definitely didn't have the best match. I think Bruno Tonali both had early yellows, and just Tonali was definitely struggling a little bit. But again, part of that is not even on them as players. Part of that is just how Pep likes to play. And I cannot remember if we mentioned this. We might have mentioned this on the last podcast about how, like they had the box midfield where they're he's always trying to get numbers advantage in the midfield. And then that's even been transformed to like at certain times using Ederson as an extension of the back line, so that you have another overload in the midfield. And so it's like, yeah, when you have a midfield three, they're going to look overwhelmed at times because that is the game plan. So first and foremost, yeah, Tonali and Bruno didn't look the best. And part of that was like, yellows were assessed to them that were, you know, a little bit early and maybe unfair, and that's the case for a lot of the Newcastle players, but that's neither here nor there. Almiron didn't look too great. Nope. I don't think anyone attack looked good. Like, no one looked good. Isak had maybe two opportunities. When Wilson came on, he had a couple opportunities, but nobody in attack looked good. But, of course, the brunt of that went towards one player that, you know, that's neither here nor there. And then Dan Byrne, I don't even think Dan Byrne looked that bad. Especially compared to other times he's gone up against elite wingers. It's just, you're asking a lot from a player to defend against some of the best attackers in the world. And he is a center back playing left back. And again, that's fine. And I think, again, given the circumstances, he was fine. But he was going up against Phil Foden, who is very good. Phil Foden is one of the best young English players in the world. So it's like, if Dan Byrne struggles a little bit with Phil Foden, then sure. But again, did Phil Foden score? No. He had an assist. He got free a couple times. But at the end of the day, Dan Byrne kind of did his job. So NFC 360 tweeted that out, and immediately everybody was dunking on them. Like, immediately. Like, that was a tweet I saw on my personal timeline. I was like, oh, I got to quote tweet this and be like, this is dumb. We just lost 1-0 to a team that literally started off the match by bringing out the three trophies they won last season. Yeah. So let's calm down. It is match day two against a very good team, and we were away from home. That was kind of the consensus from everybody.
I think that there's just some Twitter handles that seek engagement.
Yeah, and, especially with the all new Twitter blue or X blue bullshit where you can get paid for your engagement.
We're not going to pay for that. We're not going to pay for no.
Fuck that. No. Whoever's paying for it, I'm sorry. And again, I don't think any of our listeners are like this, but I'm sorry if you pay for a premium subscription of an app that is solely funny because of all the people who don't pay for blue checks, you're a fucking loser. Sorry. You're a loser. No offense. And I think it's different if you're an actual outlet, again, because you're being forced to. If you're an actual outlet, like if Protagonist has a subscription, good for them. Like, I have no idea if they do or not, but like they're actually doing good work. But everybody else, sorry, you're late.
Yeah, no, for media companies, for people that would need it, it allows you to send DMs to other people that have
You're forced to. I mean, it used to be that if you were a media company, one, you could, first and foremost. Yes. And two, if you were a media company and you were actually publishing relevant things, no matter what your leanings were or whatever it was, like as long as you were actually doing your job, you were verified. Yeah. If you were a reporter, as long as you were doing reporting, you were verified. Now it's just dumb and silly. Let's not get into Twitter blue stuff. But again, that part of it is that there's been some, and I don't even know if that's like the blame for UFC 360, because they've always been like this, that there's been a little bit of beef between some folks that come from Newcastle and them for a while. Like they have been that for a minute, and I'm surprised they haven't blocked the coming to Newcastle account, to be honest, because I've called them out on some of their fucking just biases, and they just operate with the worst biases. Like they certainly do not like certain players, and it is very evident. But that's okay. Either way, they did that tweet. Josh, I know you have some thoughts on it, and then I'll get into the meat of that, and then we'll move on. Because we might actually get under an hour here. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I just think the crux of it, the whole thing, is to say, look, you're playing against, and we've said this, and I'll just reiterate it shortly. We played against the best team in the world. We played against the English champions. We lost narrowly away at their home stadium, and it was. I don't think that it's a poor performance, Elijah. I think that's just what they do to you. I think that you could have the team that we have, and they're going to play their hearts out, and it's just going to just look subpar because that's how good City is. I'm ready to move on, unless you've got something.
There is one thing I have.
Okay, because I'm excited to talk about the next team, because I think that even though the next team is also one of the best teams in England, I think we match up better.
Yeah, for sure. Especially given how they played this past weekend and struggles with transition and all that. We'll get into that. But one thing I will say is that, and the reason I brought up the NUFC 360 tweet is that, again, there are consequences for your action. And so Bruno, who is active on Twitter and follows all the fan accounts because he's a nice guy that wants to connect with the fans, he said, "Is this serious? We are in Champions League football. We lost again, maybe to one of the best teams in the world, and we have a big win and lost one game. Support in the best moment is easy. Short, stupid memories you all have. Look what we have done for this team in 1 year and a half." Bruno tweeted that in reply, and he's since deleted the tweet. But definitely, that was his feelings, and I think everyone agreed with it. I think NUFC 360, their next move was to delete the tweet. But again, they ruined it for everybody else, because now we've found out, just due to everyone starting to report on it, that Bruno has essentially unfollowed all of the big fan accounts that he was following and interacting with on a daily basis. Adam Pearson unfollowed, Toon Polls unfollowed, Burnsy's accounts unfollowed, NUFC 360 unfollow. I think he might have unfollowed Warflags as well, but like all of the big fan accounts that he's constantly interacting with and liking tweets and retweeting stuff whenever they're saying how wonderful the team is and all that kind of jazz, he's unfollowed them all. And so like you've effectively upset, during contract negotiations, mind you, one of the best players on the team, because you want to get engagement, you want to get your agenda across in the second game of the season. So And yes, E360, enjoy that. I think that might have been one of the final straws in a lot of people's thoughts on them. Their engagement has tanked since then, but yeah, it actually has. So shout out to them. Anyway, let's move on to the next team we're playing, Liverpool. We played them. Play them this weekend. Should be a fun one. At home, back at home, at St. James's for the Sunday match. A good Sunday matinee match, I guess. If I don't even know if it's the matinee match in the UK, but it's 8:30 a.m. kickoff for those on the West Coast, and then I guess that's 11:30. I had to do math in my head. That sucked for the folks on the East Coast. Should be an interesting one. Liverpool are, of course, coming off a decent win against Bournemouth, 3-1 win, and then they drew against Chelsea beforehand. So all that kind of jazz. And then, of course, Newcastle, we already know they came off the loss against against Manchester City. So again, nothing crazy. Quick injury stuff on the Liverpool side. Curtis Jones is out, and then Thiago is still out. And Keo Willock and Kraft are out. I think if I'm looking at this correctly and just my gut instinct, I do think Kraft might be close to being selected and stuff again. I'd have to look, but I think I saw a picture of him in training in one of the more recent posts. So if that's the case, it'd be cool to see if he's gearing back up to being in match shape. Of course, he did tear his ACL in his first and only start of last season. So unfortunate for him, but we keep it moving. All that kind of good jazz. Josh, what do I have next on here? I
wrap it up. We got Liverpool. We're talking, just a little bit.
Injuries. Oh, little stats. Yeah.
A little bit of chit chat. Let's talk about their last game. They gave up a quick goal to Antoine Semenyo. Real quick. I think it was, I don't have the exact time, but it was real quick.
They had the initial one that was like offside, and then they scored immediately after because they can't deal with the press. So yeah, Semenyo scored in the third minute. I could not.
Yeah.
Speak, but yeah.
The thing is minute. That then they started to turn it around. Look, Liverpool had 65% possession. They owned the ball. They had 600 passes, 26 shots, 10 on target, 10 corners. They dominated this game. They had goals from Luis Diaz in the 28th, Mo Salah in the 36th. By the end of the first half, despite the scoreline of 2-1, they were well in control of this. I don't think that Bournemouth looked dangerous after that. And Diego Jota scored in the 62nd. I felt like you had 30 minutes after that where, sure that there were some moments. But I don't feel like Liverpool were ever really in danger.
I will say this. It did look like, hey, if this was any other team but Bournemouth and you were making these same mistakes, like there was plenty of moments where the press, like they were pressed and could not deal with it.
Yeah.
Because they don't have any real midfielders. Which is part of the reason they wanted a Caicedo and wanted Lavia and all that kind of jazz. But they turn it over and just bore. It's the same thing that happened with Newcastle under Bruce, where it's like, yeah, you win the ball back because you have good defenders and genuinely solid players and you're able to win the ball back, but you can't do anything with the ball. And it's like, if that happens, if they're making the same mistakes and same errant passes that they were making throughout the first half against Newcastle, like you're getting scored on three times.
Oh, absolutely. I was giving the good news. The good news for Liverpool is they looked good.
Okay.
They looked good against a relegation team.
Good. And Klopp's listening, so I'm sure that he took that. He's probably stopped listening since we started talking about negatives.
Look, Kloppo knows how much I hate him. So he's always going to listen. He's a smart man, but he's so full of himself. He's cantankerous, half smiling, he's just a fucking jester of a human being, and I just wish Liverpool the worst. Just because the fans are so cringy and they're always whining, and the level of hubris and entitlement is disgusting. Alexis McAllister, he goes out with a red card, and it was this,
which was a makeup call, by the way.
Yeah,
for the pen,
and it was overturned, sure, but like, listen, like. I've never seen so much pissing and moaning from a fan base. It's just a real turnoff. And the thing is, I know a lot of them, and as soon as the football's off, great human beings, lovely people.
Yeah.
You know, but just the amount of entitlement, like, well, we're Liverpool, we should get that call, and that shouldn't happen to us, and we're supposed to win, and if we don't win, then, you know, what the fuck's wrong with the ref, and then what the fuck's wrong with your team? It's never like they're never looking at what they're not doing right. It's always, you know, somebody else's fault. And I just, you know, Klopp's always got something to say. Okay, so that's all of that I have to say about the negativity. But statistically, I think that I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they're a team that can own the ball, but we could press it right out of them. And I don't think they're under construction. They're in rebuild mode. They're still one of the most, to me, they're one of the most potent offenses in the league. But you can create turnovers and problems for them by pressing high, getting into their backfield, and causing disturbances in possession.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it was rough look for the Trent Alexander-Arnold to be a midfielder crew, as he directly led to. Like, his lack of ball retention ability led to the first goal they gave up. But obviously still a great player, but I'm very curious to see how they do with the press. And I think for me, the thing that sticks out is just they still don't have a true, like, box-to-box midfielder in that midfield. McAllister's probably the closest thing they have to it, but Gakpo is playing sort of out of position. Like, he really is more of an attacking player, and he's being played in the midfield right now, I guess out of necessity. I don't really know. And then Solbeslai, I don't know how you say his name. Newcastle target. Who, by the way, Gabby Vriega, another Newcastle target from earlier in the transfer window, is going to Saudi Arabia. So that's something. But anyway, he's also still a more attack minded midfielder, you know, not a true, like, none of these guys are really get back and do the nitty gritty stuff. And McAllister is probably he's the closest they have to that. And even then, he was still more of an attacking player at Brighton. Brighton, yes, mm. Brighton. Mm-hmm. Because Caicedo was right behind him, sat right behind him. So, excuse me, I do think, like, the physicality of this midfield and the fact that, like, this is a midfield of just ball winners is really going to cause some trouble for them. And I'm curious to see how Newcastle are going to try to exploit that. That's probably right now, to me, it feels like a weakness in their midfield for Liverpool. It's just there's not really that physicality there that you'd want, especially against a team that, like Newcastle, who's wanting to make you uncomfortable and really wanting to press you and really capitalize on any mistake or bad touch you make.
The only thing I would say is don't underrate Wataru Endo, their new signing that they're bringing over from Val FB, Stuttgart.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the guy made 99 appearances for Stuttgart. He was a stalwart in their midfield, and I think that he is what they were looking for. And he's 30 years old, and so maybe he's not the sexiest hot rod that was out in the lot for them to buy. But I think for the system that they run, I think Endo is going to be fantastic for Liverpool. And don't be surprised after last week if Klopp looks at how Newcastle plays and decides to start Endo in a sort of CDM, sort of a covering the back line role. Because I think that once he's there with Van Dijk, I think that that plugs a lot of the holes and resolves a lot of the issues. And it also allows Alexander-Arnold to come back and play for more of his natural fullback role. And he's going to be bombing forward, but he's going to be recovering his position back to the back line instead of to the midfield. And I think that's just going to be better for Liverpool. So for what it's worth, I think that they do have a player that can resolve that issue for them.
I that's good. That's a good shout. I didn't think Endo would be playing this early on. You're right. There's a world in which he might start, but I'm going with the Klopp arrogance and saying that I think he gets brought on. Hopefully before things get too bad, but we'll see. But again, you would imagine it makes sense to start him because you're starting, you know, essentially two wingers in Szoboszlai and Gakpo in the midfield, or just two. I mean, they both can play all over the place, but still two attack-minded players in your midfield. There just needs to be a little bit more balance there, for sure, and it's lacking that. Let's get into history.
So a little bit of history. Let's see here. All time, we have won 50, we have drawn 44, and they have we have lost 91 to Liverpool. And I said this last year twice, and I'll say it now. I want to win every week, but I want to win this game. I really just don't like the. I just don't like them. I went back and I picked a game out where it was a 2-2 draw on it was on 19 October 2013. It was at St. James's Park in front of 51,703 Geordies. Andre Mariner was the officiating official, I guess, whatever. He's the ref. Goals by Johan Cabaye and Paul Dummett, none other than Paul Dummett. In between the pipes was Tim Krul. You had David Santon as a defender, Mapu Yanga Mbiwa as the other central defender, Mike Williamson. Mike Williamson played center back, and Mathieu Debuchy played fullback. We had Cheki Tiote in that sort of central defensive midfield role. Hatem Ben Arfa, Johan Cabaye, Moussa Sissoko in the midfield, Johan Gouffran, and Loic Remy as your forwards. You had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of your starters were Frenchmen. And I remember this season, you'd see the Geordies sort of wearing berets and bringing baguettes to the matches. It was hilarious. But you had
the opposite of now, where they're wearing very questionable costumes.
Hijabs? Not
even hijabs. They're like the tea towels, I think, is what they're. I'm not going to even mention it because I don't know what it is.
I'm not
going to disrespect another country's culture by trying to make up whatever it is. So,
yeah, I appreciate being excited for your team. I do, and I found it heartwarming at the time because the French players certainly would recognize the humor in it. And I think that was it wasn't mocking them. It was enjoying their culture, which was, France is a nearby country to England. So, of course, there was some humor in that. Paul Dummett came on for Moussa Sissoko. Sammy Amiobi, one of my favorite players of all time, of course, and his brother, the Macum killer, came on for Hatem Ben Arfa. And Vernon Anita came on for Johan Cabaye. And did I tell you who was the boss? Alan Pardew.
Yes.
I love that guy. I mean, look, I do, just because he was so entertaining. And I'll just quickly go over the other side of the ball. Brendan Rodgers was in charge. Steven Gerrard, he got a penalty goal in the 42nd. Daniel Sturridge got a goal in the 72nd. Simon Mignolet was a goalkeeper. Ali Sissoko, defender. Mamadou Sakho, Martin Skrtel, defenders. Glenn Johnson, Jordan Henderson, Kolo Touré, Steven Gerrard, Victor Moses he's actually a player that I always admired on FIFA. Lots of speed. Daniel Sturridge, of course, and Luis Suarez up top. So great team, and it was a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun one for sure. Do want to couple just really quick things to close this one out before we get into predictions. From a Liverpool side, who are you looking out for? Who's you circling? I know you mentioned Endo, but is there anyone else?
Yeah, I think for me, it's going to be a healthy Van Dijk is a dangerous Van Dijk. And I think he can stuff you at one end. And I think that he can score if they get set pieces. And remember, they earned 10 corners in the last match against a far inferior Bournemouth defensive setup. But if they get their corners earned by kind of attacking downhill the way they do, I would look out for Van Dijk on set pieces.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Yeah, for sure. I think for me, kind of in a similar vein, not in a similar vein at all, actually, now that I think about it. I'm not thinking about defenders. I'm thinking about Szoboszlai in their midfield. Yes. Szoboszlai. I think he was really good against Bournemouth. And again, you know, apples to apples, all that kind of jazz. But I think he was surprised. I think I knew he was going to be good. And because I'd seen Gakpo before, and obviously we've seen McAllister, that was kind of the wild card for me in the Liverpool setup. And so that's who I was kind of paying attention to. And he was good. I mean, he's very nifty, very crafty with the ball, you know, dribbled past some guys, all that kind of stuff. It was just really aggressive and really looking to play like these ambitious balls forward. Like, that's just kind of that kind of reminds me of like the players that Klopp really likes. And so I think that he's ultimately going to be a pretty good signing for them this season. So mm-hmm. I think that's just probably someone to look out for. And there's obviously always Salah. Like, you want to, like, he's still on his day, you know, one of the best forwards in the league, which is a new weird term that we have instead of like strikers or wingers, because you've got people like Mo Salah who can do it all. And so that's exciting. And then real quick, final thoughts before we get to predictions is, I know that like we just spoke about, oh, it's only match week two, all that kind of jazz. Do you think there'll be any changes to the lineup from the Newcastle side?
That's a solid question. Look, I don't know. No is my short answer, and only because I don't think that Howe would look to punish anybody by taking them out of the lineup. I think Howe would look at who we're playing next and decide that the lineup is his best. The lineup as it was is the best option to press and get goals out of high press against Liverpool. And I just think,
yeah.
The only change that I would consider was a more mobile left back. And I've said that for a year. And every time that I feel that way, Dan Burn goes on and has a fantastic match. So
he's definitely scoring, like, at this point with how much we're talking about him. But yeah, I would agree with that. Is I think also part of it is that the tactics Newcastle employed in this last match were so different than what they did week one, and obviously what they're probably going to do at home against Liverpool. So I think that, like, you have to kind of not throw last week out, but Eddie Howe even admitted to it. Like, it's just they're such a different team and such a good team that you kind of have to take everything with a grain of salt when playing that team. And I think you're going to probably lean more on, like, all right, if we saw how well this lineup worked in match week one against another very good team in Villa, who, like, they cleaned it up match week two, obviously, you kind of go back to that team until you notice something is off about the tactics that you'd like to employ and like to impose on other teams. Especially since it's so early in the season, like, who knows, you know, with like Miguel Almiron could score three goals against Liverpool and now everyone looks silly for being like, oh, he was so bad against Man City. Like, who knows? And Dan Burn scores and all this other stuff. So Eddie knows better than us, but I do think it's an interesting exercise and something we don't really do as often as we kind of used to, back when things were a little more dicey. And then finally, Josh, what's your prediction for this one?
I think that there's goals in this one. I think 3-2. I think this is less of a lock them down and more of an outscore them, running and gunning kind of game. I think we're going to win at home in front of those Geordies 3-2.
I don't know if it's going to be that much of a shootout. I personally think that it's going to be, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be 3-2, I'd say. I think there could be goals in this, but I usually don't do this. I don't get super bold with Newcastle predictions, even with the team being this good. But I'm going to say it's a 4-1 win for Newcastle.
Wow.
I really do think that, like, if Liverpool have not figured out, like, how to deal with that press, that it could get ugly really quick. And that's, like, when you look at some of the high-scoring games that Newcastle have had the last season, it's all about, like, the one tactical mistake that a team has not adjusted for really quickly, and this team has just been really good at pouncing on that. And, like, we talked about the high line week one against Aston Villa, but you can look at some of the other ones. Like, I think the Everton match was another one that was, like, very high score, and, like, they couldn't deal with the press, and, like, they just could not, they did not have enough time to address that. And before you know it, 10 minutes in, there's already been three goals scored. And that could be a similar situation for Liverpool, because let's be real, that was almost the case for them against Bournemouth. They were a offsides flag away, a very close offsides VAR review situation away from being down 2-0 within the span of 5 minutes.
Do you?
And that's a very different game, you know?
Yeah. Let me ask you this, and before we sign off for the night, what excuse will Klopp have to blame his loss on, other than a poor tactical game on his own behalf?
Oh, no, his go-to for Newcastle as of recent, and it used to be that Newcastle doesn't want to play, they don't want to play fully or whatever he used to say about Bruce tactics and Rafa. But this one is going to be that we're time wasting. That's his big thing with Newcastle right now, is that we're time wasting, which again is a really ridiculous claim to make when
we can't,
like you can't, and you can't really do that anymore. And Newcastle haven't done that so far. But he's going to say that we're time wasting.
Yeah,
and Liverpool fans are going to run with it, and because they'll look at any injury, like Fabian Schär is going to get a head injury, and they'll say that was a time wasting tactic, even though, like, that might happen when Liverpool are down 3-0 or something like that, or down 2-0.
Yeah. Yeah. I figured it would be something like that. It can't be the money, because they've outspent us.
Yeah.
I don't know what it could be. We'll find out.
Yeah. All right. Well, you heard it here first. Josh and I both predicting wins against Liverpool. Be sure to tune in on Sunday for that. I think if you're an American, it's going to be on USA. So, if you don't have cable, then, you know, I'm not saying look at some alternative options, but the internet's a powerful place. But I'm sure you smart folks will figure out how to watch it. I'm Elijah. That's Josh. This has been another episode of CHN Radio. Away the lads, and we love you guys. At St. James's Park, at the Gallagher's end of the rain, I'm coming home. And I'm proud to be a Geordie, and to live in Geordie land. Some people think we're bawdy, and we're hard to understand. And they say it's just self-pity, and we're not so very tough. Cause the people in the big fat city haven't had it tough as rough. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wing. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how we?" I'm coming home. Miss the old blind busker who stands at Fenwick's door. He plays a mean accordion, you've all seen him there before. And I love the Geordie heroes, there's so many famous names like Lindisfarne in Gaza, Brendan Foster in the Gateshead Games. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park, at the Gallagher's end in the rain. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wine. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle.
wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me brother saying, hey, how we? I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's End in the rain. I'm coming.